Okay, welcome back. Hour number two, and it's Monday. Was there a weekend? I heard tell there was. Can prove it by me, though. Just blinked and it's gone. All right. We are going to, this hour, talk about some pretty eclectic things, very interesting things. And for those of you who remember back in the day when people were getting their aura pictures taken with the Curlian cameras, what was that all about? No one could ever explain it, except it's your energy field. It's your aura. And it radiated in different colors, and the camera was able to capture them. And I had mine done, and many of you had yours done. If you had the bigger the aura, I guess the more violet the aura, I forget. But supposedly the more robust your overall psycho-spiritual physical health was. And it's very interesting. We're going to do something this hour that I think you'll find to be fascinating. And we'll get to that in just a few minutes. Are you there, young lady?
I'm here, Jeff. Happy Monday.
Yeah, I guess. I'll take your word for that. It's not getting any better out there. It's getting crazier all the time. Although we're just hearing more about it. As most of you know, Erica does monitor social media groups that are comprised of people who have been grievously, in many cases, wounded by the bioweapon vaccination, the kill shot, whatever you want to call it, the Department of Defense weapon, the countermeasure. There are a lot of words for it. It is a deadly weapon. It's a military-grade weapon, 100%. And that's what it's doing. It is not experimental. It is not anything like that. It is absolutely perfected and deployed, and it's doing what it was supposed to do, and that's reduce the population and make the medical pharmaceutical industry wealthy in the process. Think about it. They're killing people, and they're making a fortune at it. How diabolically evil does it get?
Yeah, the medical industry will be booming for some time.
Yeah.
If they have any medical staff left.
I don't know. We forget about what happened over a year ago, when one-third of all the professionals in the health industry in this country quit rather than take that shot. They knew, and so they walked. And that left the two-thirds behind to run the medical pharmaceutical health industry, and they were all injected. So what does that tell you? You got the dead taking care of the dead, or dying taking care of the dying in many cases. It's not good. And you've heard Nurse Ann on the program describe what it's like inside hospitals now, 600-bed hospitals and so forth. It's not good among the staff. They're not like they used to be. Granted, they're overworked. Granted, they're stressed to the max, but people have changed. And maybe what we're going to see in this hour might have some relevance to that in some cases. We'll hear about it. Anyhow, anything else?
Yeah, I can corroborate some of those stories that Nurse Ann has been relaying to us. I do come across similar scenarios from healthcare workers often.
Right.
I suppose, it's probably hit or miss. I mean, sometimes some of these, I'm guessing smaller hospitals that aren't part of these big conglomerates, you might get a little bit more personalized service, and they may not be as crowded.
Yeah.
So choose your healthcare wisely these days. You don't know what you're going to be subjected to.
No, you certainly don't. Here's a reader that Erica found. What's this about? I'll read it here in a second. Alberta, Canada. So I just read it?
Oh, yeah. It's somebody that was apparently away for a number of years and recently returned and mm-hmm. was surprised at how things have changed.
So their small town. All right. Here it is. It's short. Wow. Not sure what's going on here in Alberta, Canada. This is... It's not a small town. They may live in a suburb, but this is Alberta, Canada. This is a big city. But after 5 years of being away, we have come back to what feels like a zombie ghost town. We are staying in the core of Edmonton and go out all hours and no people. This is Edmonton, the biggest city in Alberta, I guess. I have never been able to cross a main street during rush hour. Now, there are no cars. The stores are dead. The people in them, shopping or working, look dead. They are so submissive and extremely polite. The one thing we noticed is people are drawn to us physically. People approach them. They are drawn to us. They stare. They walk toward us, act almost kid-like. We feel like aliens. I mean, we're a nice-looking couple, but this is unusual. Ha, ha, ha. And there's some laughter here. But this is something that we talked about some time ago. Erica was mentioning this, that it does seem that the vaxxed are physically, this is a bit of a stretch, attracted to the unvaxxed. And there may be reasons for that. And it may have something to do with what we're going to talk about in a little while. A whole bioenergetic feeling, a bioenergetic field of somebody that has been really messed up by the bioweapon injection is now seeking out a stable and cohesive bioelectric field to be around. Because the bioelectric fields of the people who have been injected are a mess. What else?
Yeah. That's a possibility. I've experienced it, and I've seen other people describing similar. I think we've got a couple readers tonight to that effect, too, but we have mentioned this in the past. And I noticed it the spring 2 years ago when these injections were rolling out in earnest and the general population was allowed to get them. And I had people that I know who were vaxxed approaching me in very... very strange ways. People that I, knew only really superficially would really seek me out gregariously. It was odd. It was just very, very strange. And you begin to wonder, what's behind it? I don't think they're conscious really of what they're doing. I think something is motivating that behavior. And is it? I don't know. Are they looking to recalibrate their coherence because they're damaged on some very, very fundamental etheric level? Don't know. I mean, other people have surmised that maybe they're seeking to draw energy off of those who are still intact. Or maybe they're looking to spread their whatever this alien gene is.
It could be either. Could be both. I don't know. But I'll say, I think you're onto something with the idea that somebody's bioelectric, bioenergetic, biophysiological field that is completely out of alignment, if not partially destroyed, would, if this is a world of energy that we think it is, it's all frequency, it's all energy, that person with that destroyed biophysiological field, electromagnetic field, if you will, would be perhaps drawn toward a stable, correct field. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily to destroy it, but to maybe to try to pull some kind of nurturing away from it, to make one's corrupted self whole again. It's a reflex, maybe. And we're just speculating here. But it's an interesting idea.
Well, we can see that in a cell culture when there are cancerous cells that are in proximity to healthy cells, if you can get enough healthy cells, they can influence the cancerous cells to revert to normalcy.
That's another indicator for sure. Huh. I was just thinking about, excuse me, this Universe 25 that we discussed I have two versions of an encapsulation of that experiment by John Calhoun. They'll be up there on the right-hand side in the archive. I think they're up there now. But those of you who were with us last week heard about this. It's very interesting. especially when you think of the 15-minute city concept, where everything will be all questions answered, all services provided, and what will happen to the backbone of the people in that city when they have everything provided for them. Hey, hard times make for hard people, right? Easy times make for failures and entitled losers. That's what happens. So this 15-minute city thing, there's much more to it than just allegedly trying to make all services available and relevant to people. There's something else going on here. It's going to make for weaker people, is what it's going to do. Take a look at those videos. They're fascinating. Universe 25, and then think of the 15-minute city.
Yeah, I think it's a society implodes when there's no challenge anymore.
Well, it has always been said.
That's partially what we're seeing. Generations, the last few generations, have largely been born into privilege and entitlement, and they're not willing to fight for things that are about to be taken away.
Well, fight for the basic staples of life. It is said that has been hypothesized that Europeans, European Caucasians and so forth, people in more challenging climates have achieved much more because they had to. People who live in temperate, warm, comfortable climates, the South Pacific, the Pacific Islands, anywhere along the equator, don't achieve as much as those who live in harsh climates.
Yeah,
and that would make sense. It's just common sense. Survival of the fittest. Okay? So, all right. We have this idea that auras exist, and they have been proven to exist. And I think most of you understand that. Many of you, again, as I suggested, probably have pictures of your own aura. They have cameras that take aura pictures. And if anyone out there does have a Carolian camera or knows anybody who does, it would be very interesting to take pictures of people with and without the bioweapon in their past to see how they project their energetic field, to see what it looks like in a photograph. So the idea of human beings and all living things, I would suggest, emitting, transferring some kind of frequency, EMF, electromagnetic, energetic field makes perfect sense. It's the other end of healing, according to the people you're going to hear. They're suggesting that if the corrupted fields of those who are sick with normal diseases, I don't want anyone to start thinking, oh, this is going to reverse the biological weapon injections. I don't believe so. That's because that's a genetic change. But normal illnesses, bacterial, viral, and so forth, can be corrected by correcting their energetic fields. So you're working from the outside in. The inside is ill, it's emitting a defective field, and if you can measure somehow that field and correct it, you can therefore correct the inside imbalance, which is causing and manifesting as some kind of a disease or disorder. That's the basic theory. I'll keep it real simple like that. What do you want to add to that? No, I'll play this little clip. It's interesting.
No, that's, I guess you summarized it pretty well. It's how you're tuning into the morphogenic field. And the morphogenic field basically determines how your physical form manifests.
Exactly. I mean, if you're sick and your field is off, you're not going to look so good. Just you won't. I'm really interested in this. This is all very, very interesting because we always think two-dimensional. This is three-dimensional now. We have a physical self. We have a physical biological makeup. Is that healthy? Is it not healthy? And now maybe we have the aura or the field around us that will reflect what's going on or not going on internally in your biophysiology. It's very interesting. So we thought we should play this because it's cutting edge. It has been talked about. This video is a few years old. There are a number of people in it. I won't identify them all by name, but one of them is Edgar Mitchell, and Dean Radin is in there, and there are several other people I've seen before. There's a panoply of them, and they're talking about this research that's theoretical but seems to be coming back with positive results virtually every step of the way. All right, so here we go. The video is called The Living Matrix.
Someone is in coherence, you can often feel their love or their compassion or their gratitude radiating.
Coherence is the optimal physiological state that underlies learning and performance and facilitating the body's natural regenerative processes.
The heart has its own intrinsic nervous system, which can sense, feel, remember, and process information that's independent from the brain.
All right, I hope you all heard that. I'm going to play that again. This has to do with what they call heart math, that the heart is in and of itself a separate brain in the body, which apparently processes information and then sends it on to the brain. Think about that. The heart. And then think about the damage from the injections. Erica?
Yeah, I think... when you realize the significance of that, that's rather profound.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. All right, I'm going to play this a little bit again. There we go. Yeah. Oh, got to back it up. 50. The heart has its own intrinsic nervous system, which can sense, feel,
has its own intrinsic nervous system, which can sense, feel, remember, and process information that's independent from the brain.
We always think of the information input system as being entirely in the brain. But we're now discovering information that the heart receives information first and then relays it to the brain.
Studies have shown that the heart responds faster than the brain to outside stimulation.
One of the more recent studies we did in our labs was looking at what we ended up titling the electrophysiology of intuition. There was some previous research that had been done showing that the body would respond in a way that would predict a future event if the future event was emotionally significant and relevant to the person.
Participants were attached to sensors to record their brainwave activity, heart activity, and heart-brain interactions.
A person would be sitting in a computer, push a button, and then we're recording physiological data, and 6-8 seconds later, you would be shown a photograph. And then the photograph would be from two opposite ends of the spectrum of emotional arousal.
Participants were shown pictures of car accident victims, snakes attacking, and other disturbing images. On the other end of the spectrum, the pictures included flowers or sunsets. The photographs were randomly assigned for display to the participants.
What's key here is the computer assigned not only which photograph, but which type of photograph after the data was already recorded. So it was absolutely impossible for the research subject, the experimenter, to have any kind of foreknowledge of what photograph it might be. The computer itself didn't even know.
The results were surprising. The body responded even before the picture was displayed.
Now, many people would say, that's not possible. But then if they understand anything at all about remote viewing, for example, that door then becomes open.
What we found was that not only did the body indeed respond prior to the event, you know, the scene, the picture, in a way that would predict it, but it was the heart that responded first.
The heart's response was not only faster, but the signal it sent to the brain varied depending on the emotional content of the picture.
Looking at the signals that the heart was sending to the brain, that the heart literally sent a different message to the brain, depending on what the future picture was going to be, then you saw a brain response. Then you saw the body response, which is where it then became conscious. So the flow of this intuitive information is heart, brain, body, and then you have to have the body response for it to become consciously aware of it.
What these experiments reveal is changing our basic understanding of how the human body functions.
It appears as though the heart and brain later have access to a field of information not bound by time and space.
Okay, I'm going to stop there just for a minute. This is really revolutionary dialogue you're hearing. And again, this is 3-4 years old, 5 years old, actually.
I think this work is going on. 2009.
And if this is true, we are truly prescient beings. And the heart may be the lead in terms of seeing what's coming. It knows in advance, according to the work that all these people are doing. This is really phenomenal, you think about it. You ever been around someone and you don't feel comfortable with them at all? Well, there are several factors there. One, and perhaps most easiest, would be reverse speech, because you're hearing them in reverse, what their subconscious is saying, and their subconscious will always be speaking the truth. So that can make you very uncomfortable. But think about what you've just heard. The heart and the brain are able, in an anticipatory fashion, to understand what is about to occur. What's the old expression? Trust your inner voice. Trust your inner voice. It won't lie to you.
Or lead with your
heart.
That's
one of the first things they take away from children now. It's the whole idea that there's more to them than what everyone seems to think. There is.
If we're talking kind of quantum holographics or quantum physics, that's old news. We're really starting to have ways now of showing that we really do have an energetic or an electronic system, and that's really primary. It's certainly not bound by time and space.
The heart is connected to a field of information and intelligence that's different but complementary to the field of the brain.
It's very clear these neurons in the heart and the brain part have short and long-term memory. They process information. It's a functional brain.
Other researchers theorize that the heart may be the master organ for imprinting information into the body field.
There's a lot of neural tissue in the heart, and we believe that neural tissue is there in order to act as an imprinter for the hologram.
The body's holographic body field is continually supplied with information via the pressure waves of the heart.
Inside the heart, there's an enormous amount of charge. Now, the pressure waves in the presence of this charge inside the chamber of the heart is sufficient to imprint information.
Erica, did you know that, did they teach in school anywhere, at MIT or anywhere else, that the heart has neurology to it, aside from keeping it beating, other kinds of neurology, which is what this gentleman just said?
Not really.
Say again?
Not really.
Nothing at all? No one even went there?
No.
Okay.
You know, you look at things that you can actually measure, either biochemically or with impulses or
this is kind of a leap
structurally.
This area, but if the heart is transmitting or imprinting information, there must be a way for the cells in the body to receive that information. Would that be a neurological transmission or an energetic transmission, a field transmission? Very interesting.
If the heart is transmitting or imprinting information, there must be a way for the cells in the body to receive that information.
There are receptor protein cells on the outside of the cell, which are simply there to receive environmental information. How is my day today? What is going on out there? What does the body want this little cell to do today? You see what I mean? There has to be intercellular communication, but there has to be one source so there can be one control system for the body.
This control system is sending out information to the body via the body field. But what exactly is information?
If we think of the body as both a material and an energetic, dynamically exchanging open system, which it is, we need to eat like a ton of food a year, and most of it is passed out. So all of that food is somehow turned into the body, which remains extremely stable for long periods of time. Somebody basically doesn't change much for maybe 40 years as an adult. People recognize you immediately, even 40 years later, because the basic body structure doesn't change, even though after a short period of time, you don't have a single atom left in your body. They've all exchanged and gone out. And so now this is the hamburger I ate yesterday. And, you know, in 3 weeks from now, this will be a carrot that I eat tomorrow, and so on. It's a very dynamic system, and yet I remain the same. So if it's not the material, and presumably not the energetic part, the dynamic energetic part, then what's left? There must be something like an informational pattern which holds it together.
Many scientists who are on the frontier theorize that and have demonstrated that we're an information system and it's not entirely localized in our body, that we're accessing information from the field all the time.
The body appears to be constantly connecting with information within itself and with information in the field.
The body is always looking for coherent systems, looking for information interchange between all cells he has, so that every single cell knows what's on. It's a large information system. And some people say that illness is just a lack in the information system. And I suppose they are right.
Matter is compressed energy. Information is patterns of energy. There's an information flow in our bodies that we still don't completely understand through our nervous system and through the tissues. And even the ancients, some of the ancients and the Chinese call it the acupuncture system, which is a system of information flow in the body itself.
We get a system when we get structure. You know, there's information everywhere, isn't there? But you only get an information system when it's ordered. And the great thing that was discovered in the 1980s was that the acupuncture system appears to be an organized system. It's not just a random group of acupuncture meridians. It looked, upon doing experiments, that they wanted to arrange themselves in a certain order and that they wanted to communicate with each other in a certain direction. So we're saying that information has order, and that's what makes the body feel, is the order itself.
The actual regulation of the whole organism and of all cells, the coordination of all cells, is accomplished with the help of these information fields, these scalar wave fields. They guarantee that each cell knows what every other cell is doing at any given time, and we have over 70 trillion cells. This is a lot of information, and it can only be processed with the help of these structured fields.
Ultimately, according to Einstein and other people more recently, have said that energy and information must be interchangeable. All right. So information becomes a type of energy because it's an orderliness in space. All right. So they are interchangeable, but on the other hand, in practice, what happens is you get a wave of energy, and then upon that wave, you can get imprinted information. And the amount of information you can imprint appears to be limitless.
Informational medicine, medicine that takes information and changes disturbed information, is going to be the future of medicine.
Apparently, the control system of the body is not genes or chemistry, but information, which seems to be available in the body field. Is it possible to put new information into the body to affect wellness? That is exactly what a number of researchers are doing.
That we've learned how to stop the distortion of information that occurs as a result of various disease processes. Once you stop the distortion, surprisingly enough, the physiology begins to work, the chemistry comes right. There are really wonderful healing stories to be told here. And it's simply because we've learned how to correct the distortion of information in your body field.
There you go. All right, how's that? Interesting. And one can only imagine what kind of distortions in the information field of the body there must be after this bioweapon has been injected and done its horrific damages all over the body from head to toe. Constant, nonstop. The energy field must be in grave distress, I would think.
Yeah, and I think that that is why it seems as though the people who have taken the injection know on some level they need to regain coherence somehow, and they may be gravitating towards those who are unvaxxed without even knowing.
Without even knowing. A reflex.
Yeah.
Sure. Apparently there is no distance limitation. You don't have to be within 10 feet of somebody for your body to read their energetic field. It's apparently limitless.
Yeah, it exceeds time and space or surpasses time and space. It just...
Right. Right. Okay, well...
So it's interesting, but it's tragic that so many of these people, I mean, this myocarditis seems to be prevalent in just about everybody, at least subclinically, who has taken the injection. And when you consider the heart is a receiver for this information in the morphogenic field...
All of a sudden it's compromised.
Yeah.
Or worse. We just don't know.
But and now they are, I've noticed in the myocarditis groups, they're beginning to entertain the option of pericardiectomy, which is they're going to slice into the lining of the heart to relieve some of the effusion that's happening, the fluid buildup, or the constriction that's been happening for the better part of a year, 2 years in some cases. That's what people are resorting to.
Sounds pretty radical, pretty dangerous. What's the history on that kind of surgery?
Apparently, this is not new or novel. It dates back to, I think, the 1930s. It's probably one of the first more primitive surgeries they've done. Mm-hmm. And they've improved on it over the years with good outcomes. But, gosh, that seems barbaric.
It certainly does. It is said that by some that every single person who's taken a valid and viable injection of the bioweapon does have either sub-Q or clinically observable myocarditis and or pericarditis. We don't know, but this just sounds like a new cottage industry that's beginning to build. Well, go in there and do something on that myocardium and get it straightened out. We'll cut it open and see what happens.
Oftentimes, the patterns that these people have tried many different types of drugs to deal with the pain and the inflammation, and, you know, here we are 2 years later, and they're ready to undergo the knife to try to fix what's wrong.
Not good. Being on a heart transplant list, not good. You can't find a clean heart that doesn't have spike protein crawling all over it and through it.
Right.
It's very hard. Very hard. All right, let's... Is that about enough? Did we get the idea across on this video?
I think so. I mean, there's always, you know, another element to consider in this massacre.
Right. So let you know that there are people out there doing some very forward-thinking research, and what they're finding, you just heard, is real and obviously merits a great deal of continuing research. Does this mean that the bioweapon damage can be reversed by simply introducing new information into someone's morphogenic field? I haven't any idea. I have no idea.
Well, that's the next side of the experiment. Let's see what we can do about it.
Okay. All right. Let's go off to our COVID Chronicles section and see what we can see. We have some new material that no one's heard yet. And I don't, again, know of any other forum or platform or vehicle like this program that even begins to try to explain to the world that these are real people with real problems. They'll dismiss it. Well, they're all anecdotal stories. Oh, yeah, okay. That's true. Many doctors, remember, are shot up. 2/3 of the medical community that stayed and is manning the posts were shot up. There are some that aren't, but it's a very small percentage. So we've got real obstacles here. We have a medical association now that is largely injected and suffering, obviously, all the issues we've talked about to one degree or another. There's lots of them. Shedding remains the big story. We do feel without question that the planners of this horror built that into the equation, that they knew they weren't going to get everyone to take the injection. So then they also knew that the body sheds.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you talk about people coming toward the unvaxxed, maybe for consolation, maybe for some electromagnetic, morphogenic balancing, coherence, or maybe they're coming toward the unvaxxed to do them harm.
Mm. Well, that's in there too. You know, the rabies virus is that's how it attains a new host. It changes the behavior of the animal, right. Or I guess in some people, in some cases, people, making them become aggressive or overly friendly so that it can jump to a new host.
So, okay, we have a lot of questions. That's the wonderful thing about science. It opens lots of doors that need to be explored. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope it gave you something to think about. We're much more than just simple flesh and blood. All right, shedding, families. We've got five there, March 29th.
Yes. Got it.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, someone asks, what would you do if your vaxxed parents just flew in and expected you to drop everything for 7 days and you had a family with small children you were trying to protect from shedding? Also, you've already got a really weird relationship with them and don't like them, but deal with them. What would you do? What if it was your mother-in-law and not your mom? First suggestion, you could either take supplements and wish for the best, or say no and tell them why, and then maybe that harsh treatment will open their eyes and mind to start researching. There's really no good answer for that one.
That's really a terrible thing, and it's happening all the time. Again, the initial poster's comment was, what would you do if your vaxxed parents just flew in with no notice and expected you to drop everything for 7 days, and you had a family with small children you were trying to protect from shedding? What would you do? Go ahead with the next one.
Okay. Another person says, I would make a list of touristy things to do in the area, and I would tell them about shedding. I would explain to them that I couldn't meet with them. If they cannot accept your boundaries, that's their problem. If you can't handle shedding, you cannot take any chances. Shedding is deadly for some people.
And the original poster responds to that suggestion, and she says, regarding her parents who just showed up, I went nuclear on them. After what I said, I think I won't hear from them anymore ever again. I feel badly because it wasn't very Christian of me, but I need to protect my children. And who does that anyway? Just shows up like that, just drops in, flies from Arizona to Tennessee. My husband is busy working. It's his mom and stepdad. I'm busy working. I'm just supposed to drop everything and welcome these people spreading toxins? Even before they took the bioweapon, I couldn't stand them. They're liberals, and they're just really dumb. They're the type of exhausting people who talk only about themselves and never once ask you anything about you. Total narcissists who obviously think what I do on my time is meaningless, and I can just entertain them for a week while they spew toxins. Unbelievable. My husband said to call the police if they show up. So there's a good marriage. Call the cops on them. Yeah.
Mm.
Wow. All right. Go next.
Another person says, my husband and I think these jabbers are programmed somehow to go seek out the unjabbed and spread their cooties. Seriously, over the last few years, so many of our jabbed neighbors have been bringing us food. We don't even know some of their names. Plates of food, homemade cookies, bags of lemons, homemade lemonade and Dixie cups, flats of strawberries, all go straight to the outside bin. We have all lived here for years. No food from any of them save one family, and now all of a sudden you want to randomly bring my family food? Weird, right? I tried to wash and keep the lemons, but they started plugging my ears, so out they went. I would have gone nuclear on them, too. Good for you for protecting your family. You have to.
Now, this person picked up the lemons and tried to wash them and had a response from apparently what's being shed by the people who brought the lemons.
Mm-hmm.
The spike was on the lemons, and she had a response. Her ears started to plug up. All right, and someone adds to that, I think they are programmed to seek out the non-jabbed. Interesting. I think they are programmed to seek out the non-jabbed. Also, I had a friend who knew I didn't want to be around the jabbed, and she got the shot, but never told me, and came and stayed at my house 5 times in about 6 months, 5 months. We had been friends 23 years, and before she was jabbed, she spent maybe 3 nights at my house altogether. And so she shows up 5 times in 5 months. Then had a cousin pop in wanting to swim in my pool, and I hadn't seen him in 3 years either. I find it all odd. So
it is odd.
Are the vaxxed being drawn to the unvaxxed to maybe bring them along and passively vax them or contaminate them? Or are they coming toward the unvaxxed in some primal effort to get healed, to become normal again? Or is it all of the above? Don't know.
I know.
That's a strange one. That is really a strange one. But it does,
but again,
it does kind
you know,
of collate with that video we just heard.
Right, right. So, stay tuned, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, I've noticed it, too. Without even having read these accounts, I noticed it. And I just filed it. I thought it was odd. It's, why is this person, it's more than one person, too. Just being, I would say, overly gregarious, overly forward, unusually chatty.
I have to think about this because I now that you're mentioning this, I think I have had some experiences like that too.
Hmm.
People just want to physically get in your face and start yammering and talking. Yeah,
yeah.
I can think of one case at least. I'll think about this.
Well, the odd thing is that it never happened before. In all the times you've encountered these people, they were never like that. But now, since having taken these injections, they have this unusual behavior.
Well, this is a suggestion that there may be things going on energetically that 99.9% of the people will never have a clue about and would probably dismiss it even if they were told. Okay, we have shedding rashes. We've got turbo cancer from shedding. See that one?
Yes,
let's go,
I do.
Let's go to that one next. Go ahead.
Okay. My colleague had breast cancer. Her therapists were very satisfied of her progress after surgery and chemotherapy. Her husband was also my team leader, hence I know the details. They made vacation plans after all the experts agreed she just needs to take rehab therapy and then she will have won the fight. At that time, he had gotten his third booster. They said it's important that he gets vaccinated so he won't infect her in case he might catch SARS-CoV-2. She just finished rehab and a final scan should have confirmed she is over it. Turned out her cancer came back and has spread throughout her entire body within a month. Her oncologist was surprised himself, said he has been practicing for 25 years and never saw cancer return and develop that fast. Eventually, she died due to multiple tumors 4 months later.
So her husband kept getting vaxxed to protect her.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. All right, here's another one. Need opinions, please. My father was sent to the hospital about 2 months ago due to severe back pain. MRI results showed lesions on his T12 vertebra. The ER doctor wanted him to see a urologist for possible prostate cancer. His PSA checked, and the results were 18, which is next to nothing. The doctor decided to do biopsies, which came back 4 plus 4 Gleason score. Sounds like stage 4 to me. Bone scan was next, which revealed multiple lesions on his thoracic and lumbar spine, his hips, femur, ribs, sternum, and skull, all infected with METS, METS.
He was
Exactly. He was diagnosed with stage 4 at the point, and the doctor told us that 9 out of 10 men die of something other than their prostate cancer. But this isn't the case with my father. He is only 66, and I just feel like more could be done. They have only offered him hormone therapy so far. I'm unsure of the name of the shot, but it's once every 6 months. And then daily prednisone and Zytiga. He was also prescribed pain medication, 10 milligrams of oxycodone, I would assume, or OxyContin, I don't know. I'm just 2 months. My dad has changed so much. Let me read that again correctly. The typing is all wrong here. In just 2 months, my dad has changed so much. Weight loss, lots of naps are being taken, but he's unable to sleep at nights. He's also in a lot of pain. I'm confused as to why radiation or chemo were never offered to him. His urologist said he wasn't a candidate, and he is the one managing all of the care. I moved my father in with me as soon as we found out the diagnosis, and I just feel so helpless. Need opinions, please. So these people, again, the only way you're going to find, the only place you're going to find these is where they know to go, and that's social media. Those few, and I'm not sure the majority of people know anything about these groups. Some of them may.
Oh, no. No. I did 2 months to have, you know, a disseminated cancer?
No, that's crazy. That's, yeah, super cancer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's try unvaxxed getting sick from the vaxxed. There are two here. Grab the
first
one.
Good morning, all. How is it that vaxxers are getting us sick and they are not getting sick? Makes me mad. And one answer, not all people who are not injected get sick or have shedding symptoms. Same as not all injected people get sick or die suddenly. It all depends on a lot of things, immune system, injection batch, et cetera, et cetera.
A response to that, their immune systems aren't functioning properly. If a person gets infected with a pathogen, but their bodies can no longer recognize the foreign antigens, they have no symptoms. The symptoms of disease are caused by our immune system's reaction. Think fever, runny nose, sore throat, etc. They are sick, but they don't know it. Look up Typhoid Mary. That is quite a story, Typhoid Mary. Eventually, the infections will kill them, but by then, they will be so far gone that they will die quickly. So,
I'd say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Again,
but they are shedding the spike protein, and I think that it's a case of where they are manufacturing enough antibodies to this internally generated spike that they're staving off a fair amount of damage, at least initially. But as their immune systems wear out, and they continue to produce the spike protein, it's game over.
And we know now, because of the plasmids going into the body via the injection and going into the E. coli bacteria, among others, and then setting up shop and reproducing the mRNA instruction packets and turning those loose in the body, your chances of expending all of your mRNA and being safe are virtually zero now, because you are replicating it in your body thanks to the plasmid that is introduced to your microbiome bacteria. And bacteria other places as well. This is a big, big story. Whoever built this thing was Satan's own spawn. Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, partner. Great job.
Okay.
And talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right. We'll be right back with Hour 3 and Mitch Henderson. Coming up next.